Good afternoon and welcome to the MERS Monday podcast. I'm publisher John Roering, joined by my good friend, colleague, business partner, and our editor, Kyle Malin. Kyle, we're going to talk a little bit of dollars here. Friday was a huge, huge day when it comes for us political junkies looking at strength of candidacies, strength of bank accounts. And what did we learn about the, let's start with the gubernatorial race.
Well, what we learned here is that the governor is obviously going to be leading in fundraising on Mark Schauer, 2-1 essentially with cash on hand. But I think the Democrats have to feel a little relieved here, John, that the gap isn't wider, that Snyder isn't sitting on $10 million or $15 million. I think they're somewhat encouraged that the gap is only really 2-1 and that they have the aerial support of the Democratic Governors Association going forward into the September and October months when folks are really going to be dialed in and paying attention. I think for the Snyder folks, I think they got to be, you know, happy that they are where they are. I think they would have liked to have more, but they also have the Republican Governors Association money that they can tap into as well. And so, I mean, I think what you're going to see here, people are going to dial in on Labor Day or thereabouts, and both camps are going to be pretty much saturating the airwaves. I'm a little surprised, you know, if you take a look at Snyder's money, that he hasn't put up more ads up to now. I mean, they pretty much let the Democratic Governors Association go uncontested for a while, and that narrowed the gap here. Now the RGA is going up, so maybe that will spread out a little bit. But Snyder didn't take the opportunity to try and put this one away, and I guess they're just content to just duke it out with dueling ads in September and October and feel like in the end that that will be enough for victory.
Let's talk a little bit about what the Democratic governors have committed. Now, that does, they've committed, $6 million? In terms of advertising buys going into the fall. That's not a guarantee, though, that they're going to be there.
That's exactly right. I mean, they could pull out. I mean, if the polling, you know, widens to double digits again or Snyder crests 50%, they could go ahead and take that money and go to, you know, Pennsylvania or, well, that race looks pretty good for them. But let's say Florida or Arkansas or some other state. And, you know, they could leave Schauer behind. Now, that's a big risk, though, for Democrats. That is the last thing they want to see, because if Schauer starts sinking, then that hurts their chances down ballot. And right now, they're feeling very good about Gary Peters. I don't think the House numbers looked all that bad for them either, for the state House. And then you also got, let's say, Supreme Court. And, you know, Mark Totten and Bill Schuette are running surprisingly close. So they don't want to see that money go fluttering away, that's for sure.
The Democrats also had some good news in terms of the quadrant fundraising, which is kind of always seen as a how much do the House Republicans outraise the Senate or Senate outraise the House. This time the Democrats, the House Democrats, won that contest. What does that say about Tim Grimmel and their chances at taking a majority in the fall?
Well, I thought that was really striking. Granted, they only won by $30,000 over the House Republicans and the Senate Republicans, but it's still something to boast about, that folks are feeling somewhat optimistic about the House Democrats. I think it also says something, too, about what the dynamics on the House Republican side are, though, too, especially when you take a look at the leadership packs, when you've got Kevin Cotter, Al Pasholka, Lisa Pastumas-Lyons, Frank Foster, all raising close to $100,000 for themselves and their leadership packs. It shows that they have resources. It may not be in their big general pack, but they have it kind of spread out. And so as these folks are running for speaker, they're going to be more in charge of who's going to get that money. Is it going to be Tom Barrett in the Teresa Bed race? Or will it be whoever emerges in that Grand Rapids race, you know, or Holly Hughes or what have you? You know, they're going to be deciding where their own little piece of money goes. It's a decentralized approach. It's somewhat risky.
I was going to say, it's kind of risky because, I mean, based on where they think that potential candidate may line up in the fall after the election for the leadership election, they could fragment those resources instead of having a control under a caucus.
We saw that in 2010, didn't we, with Hamill and Woodrow Stanley. Remember, they had kind of separated, and we had two different wings of the Democratic Party going out there, and Andy Dillon was running for governor, and what you saw was a complete decimation of the Democrats in the House and the Republicans taking control. You know, if I had my preference, I would rather be in a situation, a leadership situation now of the Democrats right now, where you know who your leader's going to be, mm-hmm. Tim Grimmel, and they've got one central focus going forward and they're operating all from the same playbook. You know, when you start fragmenting things out a little bit, things can get a little fragmented. And the messaging and the teamwork may just not be there like it would be, like when Jace Bolger and Stamos and Walsh and Lund were all rowing in the same direction. Mm-hmm.
Jumping back a little bit to the gubernatorial race, the Snyder campaign seemed to be making a lot of hay over the weekend. Mr. Schauer accepted 900 and I think it was 53,000 or 83,000 in public funds for the primary. Is that an issue that most people really care about?
I don't think so. I mean, they shouldn't anyway. I mean, you fill out your own tax form and you have the option whether you want to put $3 into the special fund that goes toward the Democrat or the Republican gubernatorial candidate if they want to take public funds. If you don't want to give to the fund, you don't have to give to the fund. And in fact, most people don't take from it as far as political candidates because they don't have to. I think this is pretty inside baseball kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, I don't think anybody really gives a rip. You know, if you don't like the law as it is there, then change it. And if you don't like it, don't give to it. But the fact is people do give to it because they see some value in it anyway. And, you know, I think it's just something to poke at and maybe nick at him for. I think the fact that Schauer voted in the Republican presidential primary in 2012 is more interesting to your average voter. But even then, I don't know how much folks out there necessarily care on that either.
Mm-hmm. Because we were talking about it, I don't think there's been public money accepted in the general election cycle going back quite a ways.
Yeah, it was certainly not in 10, not in 6, not in 2002. Figer wouldn't have needed it. 94, would Wolpe have needed it?
I don't know. We'll have to do some research. That might make an interesting article. Is this system even worth the effort of maintaining it?
You know, one of the other things that I thought was really interesting looking at these campaign finance reports is the two races in the House I want to focus on in particular. First of all, Frank Foster, having raised $154,000. I got to tell you, John, he's going to need every dollar of it. I think he's in real, real trouble. This Chatfield character, Lee Chatfield up in that district, for a Tea Party candidate to raise $74,000 is pretty remarkable. And from what I saw up there a couple weekends ago, he was all over Sheboygan and Mackinac and Emmett County there. So I would be I'd be very concerned if I was Frank Foster. The other thing I want to point out too is Gary Glenn. For Gary Glenn to be basically dead even with Carl Eider in the 98th district tells me that. If I were putting odds on it right now, I would say Gary Glenn's going to be a state representative. For a Tea Party candidate to get resources is very hard. And so when it happens, it's something that you got to take notice of.
How is the Tea Party going to do overall in the House? You think these two guys have a chance? What about Todd Corser? What about Wendy Day? Where are we looking at as far as overall Tea Party performance?
The Tea Party could still perform fairly well. And, you know, Todd Corser, I think, is still a very real possibility. I didn't think Cindy Gamrat's numbers were as big as I thought they would be. But, you know, you really just can't discount, you know, numbers either. You know, you take a look at that primary race with Eric Cantor in Virginia. You know, he outspent his opponent by a vast amount of money and still lost. So you can't necessarily look at that. A lot of that is what kind of traffic are they generating on the roads and the door knocking and that type of thing. And that's kind of hard to gauge here in Lansing. So I wouldn't discount really many of the Tea Party candidates at all. I think the top theme and the top storyline of how they performed on a primary election day.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about public policy and how that interacts with this Tea Party. If we get 5 or 6 of these Tea Party guys in the House, does that make it a lot more difficult, let's say, if Governor Snyder is reelected, to get a road package or to get sort of that middle ground that you need to get things done? Does it make his job harder?
Oh, absolutely. It makes it a ton harder. So let's say you get a block of those 6 or so, and the margin is still, let's say, 60-50 Republicans in the House. And if you need one of those 6 to budge in order to get a road funding package through, that means you got to go to the Democrats. I mean, you got to go to the Democrats anyway, but that makes it, but you, those are 6 votes that you're never going to get. And so that just makes your job a lot harder. And quite frankly, it encourages bipartisanship and makes it more realistic that Democrats will actually get something done, in the sense that they're not going to give something for nothing, right? And so if they're going to give for the road package, they're going to get. And the more times you have to give, the more you got to get. It's I just think it's simple math there. And so the more seats they pick up, and we counted as many as 14 are out there. I don't know if they can pick up 14. That'd be pretty amazing. But if they can crest something like that, it's almost like they become their own little minority party, mm-hmm. quite frankly. Within the Republican Party, they become almost like a subset, which is, you know, really a stark difference than what we have. It's almost like we've gone to Europe and coalition building, for crying out loud.
It would be interesting to see who gets the coalition support there. For either guy would have a tough time, so... All right, great. Well, next we've got a talk with a couple of the candidates in the 14th Congressional District, current Representative Rudy Hobbs and Brenda Lawrence, Mayor of Southfield. So let's take a look at that race.
Joining us on the other end of the line, Brenda Lawrence, candidate for Congress in the 14th District. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today, Mayor.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are only 7 days away from the primary election. Tell us how you're feeling as the days tick by here toward the primary election.
I'm excited. This has been quite the journey and quite the race. Every day we have to make sure that you don't leave any stone unturned and get every vote you can, and I'm excited.
Why do you think this result is going to be different than the last result when you ran for Congress in this district?
Well, I've been very strategic in getting my message out. I've worked hard touching the voters. I assembled a great team, and Emily's List came on board and just really gave some additional support and has been great counsel in this race. I can tell you that my ability to mail, to have amassed a team of interns, that 60 interns who are either on the phone or walking every day has really prepared me to touch the voters. My name recognition is very high, and my favorability is very high. And so because of that, I've been able to persuade and to connect with voters to get their support.
You mentioned Emily's List, and Emily's List is actually financially supporting you this time, from what I understand, which is different from the last campaign. And
Emily's List is interesting. While they're 100% behind women candidates, you must have a pathway to victory. They are very strategic in their support. While they do support women, they want to make sure that you have the team, the financial structure on your own, and statistical formula to win a race. And so when they came in and endorsed me and then came in and made me a top-tier candidate, that's really a great compliment.
And then I saw womenvoteproject.org. That's a kind of an offshoot of Emily's List, isn't it?
It's a political pack.
Yeah. And you're one of the featured candidates on that website.
Yes, I am.
Among all the candidates in the country, it looks like you're one of the top three they're really looking at getting elected here into Congress.
They have been extremely supportive of me in the race. And I tell you, the way this race has been in the last few months, I'm so glad I have them.
Now, tell us about your relationship with Rudy Hobbs. My understanding is that he has been supportive of you in the past as far as your runs for Southfield mayor.
Well, it's interesting. His mother-in-law and I grew up together. We're like sisters, literally. We live across the street from each other and each other's wedding and, you know, just really close friends. So when Rudy was in his 20s, he came to me and said, I want to get in politics. Can you teach me? So his children and my granddaughter are extremely close. So So it's a quite a different scenario to be on the ballot opposing each other.
Boy, that does got to be a little strange. And you guys, didn't he work on your campaign, and didn't you work to help him get elected to the House?
I walked door to door. I endorsed. I used all my political prowess to support him, to get him in on the school board and into the state house. Because in South Hill, I am very highly respected, and I've been reelected 4 times. And the one time I was opposed, I won with 80% of the vote. Mm-hmm. And so I worked very hard to get him elected. And it's interesting, this is the first time my face hasn't been very prominent on his literature.
I'm sure. So this must have been a very strange discussion when you guys were talking about running for Congress. Was there a conversation beforehand that he was running, or how did this break down?
He decided to run. Gary Peters, 3 months into his Senate, announced he was going to run for Senate. And Rudy immediately came and said he wanted to run. Well, I was still trying to figure out and recover from that last election. I was not mentally or physically willing to get in that race. And so his discussion and ours continued. And he said, "Well, I'm going for it. I want to do it now." And my response to him was, "Rudy, I'm not going to tell you I'm going to run. I'm just not ready, and I'm not going to be forced into making a decision now." And he said, "Well, I'm going to go for it." So, I mean, it's America. It was his dream. I really didn't know what I was going to do at that point. And so he started his campaign. So he was out there probably about 8 months before I even got into it or decided to run.
So he'd been in the race for a year, and then why did you decide, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and try this again as well?
What happened is that just randomly someone did a poll, it wasn't me, that said they polled South Hill, and they said if the election for Congress was today and the following people are on the ballot, who would you support? Mm-hmm. And my name was on there, Rudy Hobbs. At that time, Vincent Gregory was in there. And I got 60% of the vote on this little random poll someone did. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said, "What? Really?" Because, you know, part of the thing people said is that people wouldn't support you. You just ran for Congress, you know, and they're tired of you running, you know, just all kind of things. You can't raise money, you can't do this and that. And so when I saw that poll, I said, okay, let me run a real poll. So I hired a national pollster, Celinda Lake, and because, you know, when that poll happened, I think Murs wrote about it.
Yep, we did.
You know, my friends came, did you see that? You know? And I go, that's really weird. Who did that? And so I said, let me hire a real pollster. And this was the week of Thanksgiving. And I hired Lake Research. She did a poll in her firm. And it came back as the election was held. At that time, Hansen was nowhere to be found. I would get 60% of the vote. And I was like, wow. So, I'm sorry, I would get 40% of the vote. I had 40% and everyone else was under 10%. So then I said, well, they hit on me, you can't raise money. So I got on the phone the week of Thanksgiving, quarter was over, New Year's Eve, and in 30 days I raised $100,000. I said, oh, well, I guess I can raise money. So that's when I decided to get in the race, and I didn't get in the race until the next year. I announced I started getting my petition and started assembling the interns and started the campaign in the first part of this year.
So what was Rudy's reaction when you told him you were getting in?
Well, Rudy was so far down the road by that time. I mean, he had over 8 months of assembling endorsements and working hard, and, you know, it was clear that he was ingrained and invested in this campaign.
Well, very good. Well, we've taken up a lot of your time today. We appreciate you giving us a call today. And that's Brenda Lawrence, mayor of Southfield and candidate in the 14th Congressional District. Thanks for the time today, and good luck on next Tuesday.
Well, thank you. 7 days for victory.
Joining me on the other end of the line now is Rudy Hobbs, state representative and candidate in the 14th Congressional District. Rudy, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Hey, no problem, Kyle.
Well, I got to say that this could be a first that I've seen here, where the Michigan Chamber of Commerce has endorsed a Democrat in a congressional race, and you are the proud recipient of that. Now you have the business community and you have labor. This has got to be pretty flattering.
It's actually kind of humbling, you know, to kind of get so much support, you know, coming out the gate, you know, over a year ago when we kind of thought about, you know, how we put together a campaign, how we build an infrastructure. I mean, it's exactly what we envisioned, and I believe that it's because of the hard work that we put into, you know, not only during this campaign, but even as a legislator, you know, really working across the aisle, being a constructive, you know, member in the House, you know, always working in a bipartisan way, you know, and those things are starting to pay off for us, and it's helping us really, you know, build this momentum going into these last week that I think is going to take us over the top.
Now, you do have the resources, it looks like, to go on TV. That's got to also be kind of advantageous for you to help spread the name ID, because it seems like that's been kind of the stumbling block for you for now. I mean, you've represented a state House seat, but largely unknown in Detroit. Would you say that's been kind of one of your biggest hurdles, is the name ID in Detroit?
I mean, absolutely. My team, we're very strategic. I mean, we understand what the obstacles are. I mean, we understood what the obstacles were, you know, walking into this. But campaigning requires a certain amount of patience, too. And everybody's, you know, from day one, it's like, oh, you got to address the name recognition. Well, there's a time that when, you know, when you come out, when you spend your resources, and now is that time. And I think we really kind of hit the sweet spot. You know, we were able to move 15 points in a poll, in several polls, to get into the 20%, to be, you know, close behind Brenda, you know, still trailing Hanson, but being very close. That's before we even went up on TV, Kyle. I mean, now that we're on TV, I think you're going to start to see this momentum. It's almost like layering. We have knocked over 52,000 doors. Actually, probably about 55,000 after this weekend. Some twice. We've made over 70,000 phone calls to every voter in this district. You know, some people were called twice. And then you start to layer, you know, mail. And then you finish it off and layer it with TV. I really think you'll see the numbers really start to move and start to address that issue that many people, you know, thought was a huge problem. That's the name recognition piece. So, and it's working. You know, I visited churches over this past weekend, and, you know, when people announce that I'm at church, or if I give a few words at church, automatically people come up to me and like, I saw your TV ads. They are absolutely wonderful. So it's working.
Now, this has also had to be a tough campaign for you because of your relationship with Brenda Lawrence. I understand she helped get you into politics. Talk about that a little bit and that dynamic.
Yeah, she's my mother-in-law, and Brenda grew up together. And I went to school with our kids, and my wife, we were high school sweethearts, so my wife also went to school with Brenda's kids, and we're all very close. Her granddaughter and my daughter are best friends. So it's very close relationship, but it's not difficult. I mean, you know, it's business, it's politics, it's, you know, she feels as though she's the best candidate. She has every right to run. You know, of course, I feel like I'm the best candidate and will win, and feel like, you know, that I have a right to run. So it's not personal at all. You know, it's for me, it's just, you know, staying focused on building our infrastructure, you know, staying close to our message, knocking the doors and putting in the work to make sure that we win. And that's what we've been about the entire time. You know, no negative campaigning from us.
Well, and I was just going to say that would really be kind of awkward if you went negative on her.
Wouldn't even think about it. I don't feel like I have to go negative. I feel like when voters match three of us up, there's two candidates in a race that have been elected in this region for the last 20 years, and then myself. You know, I believe that voters are going to pick, you know, young, energetic leadership that's going to take, you know, fresh ideas and energy out to D.C. That's what I believe, and that's what we're seeing. You know, that's what we hear on the doors. You know, our internal polling, you know, says that. And so we don't feel like we have to go negative on anyone. You know, there is a certain amount of negative campaigning going on, but, you know, it's not coming from our camp at all.
So you are up on TV right now. We're 7 days away from Election Day. Is the amount of spots that you guys are going to be putting up here in this last week going to increase, stay the same, or taper off?
We'll have to see. I mean, we're pretty comfortable with the amount of, how many times we're up on TV per week now. I mean, former state representative Maureen Stapleton texted me the other day. She was like, she's like, 2 days, I've seen you four times on TV. She was like, that's a great buy. You know, I mean, so we really feel like, you know, we're reaching people. You know, we're talking to people. People are starting to put it all together now. You know, that's the guy that knocked on my door twice. You know, that's the guy I received a piece of mail from. I received a phone call from, and now we see him on TV. And, you know, this is going to be our guy. So we really feel like it's helping out. It's helping out on the doors and volunteers. We're hearing back from volunteers that now when they knock on doors, it's easy. You know, we know exactly who he is. You know, so it's been helpful.
Now, I understand that Brenda Lawrence isn't on TV, probably is not going to be on TV. And Hanson Clark, he's not on television either, is he?
I don't think he has the resources to be on TV.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
He won't be on TV either.
Yeah.
And both are good people. I just think that our campaign, the type of campaign that we put together, the type of support that we've been able to garner and earn, it's built, you know, for a primary. It's built for a primary that's probably going to have about 80,000 people that come out. And these are going to be motivated voters. And these are going to be voters who have been touched by us, who have been touched by their labor organization, you know, or who received a mailing from any other organization that had endorsed us. So, I mean, we feel very comfortable going into the primary. Lots of hard work. You know, Kyle, you covered me when I ran for state representative in 2010. Man, I'm a tremendously hard worker. I believe that, you know, a lot of these primaries are won in neighborhoods. They're not won, you know, at debates. They're not won at, you know, neighborhood, you know, meet and greets. They're won door by door, you know, voter by voter. And that's what we've been putting our energy into.
Boy, this is a large congressional district to hit doors. How many homes do you think you've actually talked to people at?
Actually, talk to people. Our contact rate at the doors is probably about 20% or so, maybe about 25%. So, like I said, we've knocked over 52,000 doors, or 55,000 after this weekend. So, I mean, we've talked to quite a few people at the doors. Lots of yard signs. You know, we had 2,500 yard signs. They're all gone.
Wow.
We had to order more. I mean, we've really been putting the work in.
And then how many votes do you think you're going to need in order to win?
About 28,000 or so.
Okay. And if you crest over what, 35-36%, should that do it?
I will feel more comfortable saying about 37-38.
Okay. All right.
I will feel comfortable around that number.
And your internal polls shows the trajectory is continuing to go up for you then.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And we hear it on the ground. I mean, we feel it in the neighborhoods. When we're on the doors, when we're out at, you know, events. So we feel very comfortable about where we're at with this race.
All right, very good. I appreciate the time today. Rudy Hobbs, candidate for the 14th Congressional District, State Representative. Thanks for the time today.
Hey, no problem, Kyle.
All right, that's it for this week's MERS Monday podcast. We've got a special little bit of news here, Kyle. The MERS family got a little bit bigger on Saturday.
By one.
Samuel Mauger was born to Craig and Bethany Mauger. Congratulations to them.
Yeah, very wonderful.
A very wonderful news indeed. So that's good for them. We also want to thank today the Michigan Press Association for sponsoring this podcast and every other podcast. And the Michigan Association of Health Plans. I was able to go up to Traverse City last week to cover their conference. Always an interesting group, always interesting topics, and some interesting poll numbers that came out Friday afternoon that they were kind enough to share with us. So special thanks to the Michigan Association of Health Plans. That's it for this week. I'm John Roerink, and we'll talk to you next week.